Basketball Manitoba podcast, we have Dean Favoni. Dean is the varsity boys coach at Dakota Collegiate, a role he's held for over 30 years. He's coached many top 10 players in the province, and in 2002, his team won the provincial championship. He has been MBCA Coach of the Year and has coached with the provincial team and the Center for Performance. His most recent success has been the fundraising and creation of a state-of-the-art $1.5 million multi-sport complex, which includes an outdoor basketball court in honor of the great Dale Bradshaw. Dean, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Darcy. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I was told by a few people that you're one of our few fans that you're fairly consistent. So for you to be on here, this is a big moment for you. This is what I've been told. Now I treat everybody the same, but I honestly super, super excited to have you on the podcast.
Thanks. I enjoy listening to them. It's most of the people you've interviewed are people I've coached against as coaches or players or people that I've heard of. And I enjoy the stories that come along with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the best part of it for me as well, is just the stories. And so I know you have some, so we're definitely going to dig in there. But I actually wanted to start with how I guess I know you or how I've met you. Right. And interestingly enough, like, you know, you were coaching back when I was a player. Like, you
correct.
Been coached around
ASU
for
as a player.
Correct. Correct. And so I got to ask, back when I was playing, how old were you? Because when I was, in my mind, you know, high school kids have zero perception. Like, we have no idea how
correct.
Old people are. We don't know. Sometimes we're being coached by absolute legends. I remember being talking to Ross Wedlake, and he was reffing a game where I was a high school coach. This is an absolute legend. I'm like, who is this ref? Like, what's going on here? He's making terrible calls. This guy's a legend. So the question I have for you is, how old are you when I was playing and you were coaching? And how long had you been coaching for?
What year did you graduate?
So I graduated the year before you won it, in 2000.
So at that
2001, point, sorry, 2001, sorry.
You graduated 2001.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had been coaching, I was probably in my early 30s then.
Okay. So we said over 30 years that you've been coaching at Dakota. Yeah.
So I went from high school at Transcona Collegiate. My high school coach was Jerry Badu, who loved basketball, and we played all the time. He was ready to play any noon hour after school. It was great. And went from there to University of Winnipeg for 4 years, and then I got the job here at Dakota. So I was here when I was 22 years old.
That's why.
I was coaching JV boys for 2 years with Manoj Narang, and then did the varsity team every year after that. But I started here when I was 22 and was the varsity coach at 24.
Okay, so that makes sense as to why I'm like, you know, this is and it's interesting, because so I wasn't too far off. I mean, at that time you had been coaching for quite a while. Like, I mean, not 30 years, but it's not like you
correct.
Were in your second year or anything like that at
no,
that time.
No, not brand new.
Yeah. That's super interesting, because I remember I was talking to a good friend of mine, Graham Bodner, who I know is listening right now. And
who's now my new neighbor. He lives across.
Yes, this is true. I know. He told me. I went to his house. He said, you know who lives down the street? And he's like, Dean. I'm like, oh, cool. That's crazy.
There is no one that likes basketball more than Bodner.
Oh, it's unbelievable. He loves the game. Absolutely. So what he told me was, he told me to ask you that. He's like, ask Dean how old he was, because when we were playing, I felt like he'd been coaching forever. So like, when did he get started? Right. And so I was like, that question comes from him. But you mentioned early on, you know, you went to Transcona. So you're a Transcona kid. You're
correct
up there.
Born and raised. Yep.
Born and raised. And now you've lived most of your life now on the South Side.
Correct. I live close to school. Yeah.
Yeah. Close to the school. So then what were you
out or got out, depending on your perspective?
Oh, easy now. We may have some people that are from Transcona.
I have nothing but fond memories of Transcona.
Okay.
Yes.
So then what was the situation in Transcona? You'd mentioned your coach there. Like, when did you get started playing basketball and like getting involved in the game as a kid?
So when I was a kid growing up, there was no club, right? Everything happened through school. And I remember my dad putting a hoop up on the garage and shooting hoops with my dad and my brother. And then through junior high and high school, I had two really good friends, Mike and Kevin. And Kevin lived half a block from Transcona Collegiate, and we would go there and play on his hoop, which is a little lower and easier to dunk and do some things on, probably too low to actually get better on. But we enjoyed that. And the three of us, along with my brother Perry, we played there all summer, any chance we could get. And 7-Eleven wasn't far away. And as a kid, we'd play and then go grab a drink and come back and play some more. But the funny thing about that is my friend Mike, and we remain friends to this day.
Yeah.
So the three of us were on the high school team together. But Mike, at some point in junior high or high school, had a medical, something was wrong with his leg and his hip, and he had to have surgery. Mm-hmm. And all healed fine, but he had this medical note that exempted him from all phys ed classes, but somehow he still managed to play on the JV and varsity basketball team. So here he is practicing and playing, and we're going to games and tournaments together, but he's got this note that exempts him from anything to do with in-school phys ed.
So wait, hold on. Did he get out of phys ed for his entire high school?
Correct. I don't think he attended one phys ed class and graduated and has his high school diploma without doing any phys ed, but he was on the basketball team.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. So you played, were you guys any good in high school? Like, was Transcona any good back then?
No, I would say not. Like my grade 11 year, I'd say we were better than grade 12, but I don't have a recollection of going to provincials. Like, I never went to provincials as a kid in high school. Mm-hmm. And then when I started coaching here, and there's a little bit different environment and culture around sport at Dakota. And if I were to compare the teams that I've coached here against the teams that I played on, I think the teams here are much, much more talented. And that doesn't take away from my experience here. Like, I loved it. I loved my coach, Jerry Badu, and I loved my teammates. I just think we were average.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but I will say that my first year at Dakota, our varsity boys were in the Final Four, and part of the Transcona was in the Final Four that year. And they made the championship game and lost, I think, to Daniel Mack. But I remember being so happy for Jerry to have reached that point in his coaching career, because he'd put in so much time with so many of us, and I was really happy for him.
Oh, that's cool. So you know, you went on, obviously, like you kind of mentioned how quickly you ended up coaching. So, you know, typically when that takes place, like, there's not a lot of playing. If you're starting at 22, you graduate, you get right to Dakota.
Correct.
So kind of walk us through this path, because at what point, I mean, let me ask you this question. At what point was your first coaching experience? Like, was it at Dakota that was number one, or did you do any other coaching camps of any kind?
No, I did. I went back to my high school and I coached, actually played a lot of soccer growing up. So I helped coach a soccer team at Transcona Collegiate. And then when I was student teaching, I helped coach, I think it was a grade 8 or grade 9 girls team. I did some of the, you would remember the regional teams that existed back then.
Yeah, of course.
I helped out with the regional team. But when I had the job was posted here and I got my job, I remember I'd say half of the interview with Wayne Ruff was on coaching and what I wanted to coach and some coaching philosophy questions, which I did my best to answer. But at 22, I had certainly limited experience with leading any group of people to do anything. I have my degree and had lots of involvement with some church youth group stuff, but I was not a seasoned coach with lots of experience by a long shot. But I know, I'm convinced that being willing to coach and get involved in the school was a big part of why I got hired.
Mm-hmm. So what brought you to coaching? You said you're helping out at Transcona. Like, what actually even got you to doing that stuff?
My dad had coached us, as me and my brother and my sister, along the way growing up. My dad was a big community guy. Mm-hmm. And I knew that was coaching at school is part of my giving back to the school and my way of contributing beyond the classroom. I think schools work better if there's a bunch of people in them that are willing to do things beyond the, you know, your day-to-day classroom curriculum stuff. That's not the main part that kids are going to remember, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you're doing that while you were in university, you're kind of coaching at TTI, and so then you graduate. How quickly did you get to Dakota? Did you get that offer, like, straight away?
That's a great story. So I had applied for a job, and at that time there was no, in the 90s, early 90s, like 90, 90, 91, I put my resume out there. I mailed my resume to multiple divisions, got some calls, had an interview, didn't get it. And then this job came open, and it was a math job, and mm-hmm. I applied, got the interview. And at the end of the interview, they told me, and this is in June, they said, well, we're not going to hire this position now. We're going to rejig some of the postings. We want you to keep your eye open. We'll repost this. We want you to reapply over the summer. Okay. So I sat on this for the summer, and nothing came from it. And late August, it was reposted, and I applied again and had an interview set up for Labor Day long weekend. And coincidence, that weekend I was helping run a church youth retreat in Brandon.
Okay.
And so I had an interview ready to go, and I think for the Saturday or the Sunday of the long weekend. But as I'm leaving on Friday for Brandon for this event, my phone rings, and my home phone rings.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
And phone rings, and it's Bob Town.
Yeah,
it's Bob Town, who's at the time as principal of Nelson Mack, who's the guy you should interview on the podcast.
He's he is coming up right away.
So, but I don't know who Bob is. I have no basketball knowledge at this point about who Bob Town is. I don't know these principal. He just says, "Hey, I'm principal of Nelson Mack. We found your resume. We want to interview you." I said, "Oh," I said, "I'm leaving for Brandon right now." He said, "Well, stop in on your way out. We won't take long." I said, "I have my sister and her friend with her," and he says, "Well, they can wait in the office." I said, "I'm in shorts and a t-shirt. I'm not really dressed for an interview." He said, "We're very casual. Just stop in."
Yeah.
So I can't say no. So I go to the interview on the Friday, and have the interview ends, and I said, "Like, I'm driving to Brandon right now. Can I get a hold of you?" And he said, "Give me a minute." So him and I assume the vice principal left the room, and they come back in, and he says, "I'd like to offer you the job." And it was for a three-quarter time math job. And I said, "Well, that's great, but I've got an interview at Dakota on Saturday or Sunday." And this is, I owe so much to Bob Town for this. I'll never forget this. And he tells me, "Here's what I want you to do. Go have the interview at Dakota. And if they offer you the job, I want you to take it."
Wow.
I said, "Oh, why is that? Like, you're offering me three quarter, they're only half time." And he says, "Well, we are a small," at the time there, the divisions were different than they are now. And he said, we're the only English speaking high school in our division, and we're tiny. He said, "Chances for you for long-term employment are better with Dakota than with us." He said, "If they offer you the job, I want you to take it." And he could have easily, it's Labor Day weekend. He needs a teacher for 5 days, so he easily could have said, "You know what, put the screws to me and just force me to make a decision," and he didn't. So I got in the car, drove to Brandon, ran the retreat for a day or two, drove back to Winnipeg, had the interview, second interview with Dakota, told them I had an offer from Nelson Mack, went to my now wife's apartment, waited for a phone call from Dakota. They offered me the job. I accepted. I called Bob back, thanked him and declined, drove back to Brandon, finished the retreat, drove back to Winnipeg on Monday, and started at Dakota on Tuesday.
Wow. Wow. So, wow.
A few years went by, and Bob Town's oldest boy was playing for Glenlawn.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him in the crowd, and I called him out. And I said, "I don't know if you remember me, but I need to thank you." And he said, "Oh, I remember you." So,
yeah.
And I later went on to coach his second son, Andrew, who was a Dakota kid.
Yeah. So like, yeah, I obviously played with Sean. Sean's his first name, right. Andrew. Yeah. So it's the South Side connections here in basketball. And then the Bob Town thing, that's so funny, because I mean, he's literally, I think, coming up soon. Like, I'm interviewing him after this. So
he's great.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But what a weird connection, just to kind of, that's interesting. So you start at Dakota, like you said, you started up pretty straight away, but you didn't start coaching that same year, did you?
Correct.
You did?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
I did 2 years of the JV boys with Manoj Narang.
Okay. And then what was like that? Like, that's your first, I guess, high school boys basketball experience. Like, what do you remember from those first couple of years?
What do I remember from that? I don't know. I think Manoj and I are different personalities. I think we learned a few things from each other. But I was so green. Like,
I was going to say,
I didn't know a whole lot. That's for sure. I was willing to try and get in there and learn. and it's stuck. Like I've been doing it every year since. So
Well, I mean, on that note, like, tell me about some of your mentors. Like, it was in 30 years. You obviously, like you said, you started with Manoj, you're green. And shout out to Manoj, my actually, again, getting back to the
your
weird
coach,
circular,
your
my
high school
coach.
coach.
Yes, exactly. So there's a weird connections here. But who are some of those mentors that, you're green and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, like I need help. Tell me
So
about that.
I think I've learned basketball from a lot of people, but I would like to say I've learned most of what I've learned about coaching, I've learned from Phil Hudson. So I might be the first guy on your basketball podcast to reference a volleyball coach, but Phil Hudson was here before I got here. And I think we taught together for 28, 29, maybe 30 years. He's now the women's coach at University of Winnipeg for their volleyball program. And he is terrific. Like I couldn't get enough of listening to him. So I would go to the odd volleyball practice. I'd go to volleyball games. I'd ask if I
No
could sit
way.
on his bench. I would
Really?
ask to be part of team meetings as they're heading into Final Fours. I'd go to the odd video session. Not because I was interested in, the scheming of volleyball, because I didn't play and I have really limited knowledge of that, but I just wanted to hear how he said things, hear how he talked to people, hear see how he ran a practice, what was his focus mentally as he's getting guys ready for big games. I asked to sit on his bench sometimes, be part of the huddles, and just tried to listen to as much as I could. And he taught a class here in, I think it was called Rec Athletics and Leadership. And it's a classroom-based course, and phys ed class isn't a classroom, so they go to whatever room is open at the time. And if it happened to be in the room I was teaching in, I'd ask them if I could stay, and I'd stay and listen to as much as I could, and as I was marking or prepping or doing whatever. But I w just for like I said, for almost 30 years, it was a well-worn path between my room and the gym, as I would consult with him on all kinds of things about. And we would talk about his practices and his games and my practices, my games. And it was a, you see each other in the morning, and one of the first co comments or questions to each other was, how was your practice last night? Who's doing well? What went well? What are we working on? And it was back and forth like that for a long time. It was great. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Sorry, there's the basketball I've learned from lots of people, but coaching, I was really lucky to be in a school with a guy who's that accomplished and that good at his craft.
And so talk to me a little bit more about that, because I had this realization at some point. I don't remember when it was, but I came to realize, probably through experiences with really good leaders and coaches and people who weren't really good leaders and coaches, that coaching is a skill in itself. And knowing about basketball does not make you a good coach, right? Like, you can know a whole
Right.
bunch about basketball. That does not make you a good coach. And the theory that I had is that you could bring in, again, Phil Hudson, you could bring in a hockey coach. If they have the right assistance, and they know how to motivate people and connect with people, they will do a better job than someone who really knows basketball but doesn't have those skills.
Yeah, and he's shown that. Like he's coached all kinds of sports, and partly because that's his job in phys ed. But I know he's coached hockey and ringette, and he's successful. Like I'm just again so grateful to have been around him. But the basketball wise, like when I was here, there was a guy who was coaching varsity girls at the time, was Carl Lowen, who's since moved on to Texas, and he was helpful when I first got going. I would watch. I never really. I Randy Cassano is of course legend here, and I've learned a lot from watching Randy's teams. I can't say I've actually sat down and like, Randy, tell me how to do this or what do I do here, but I would watch Oak Park a lot. Like they are successful all the time. What can I do to be kind of elevate our program status to the stuff that Oak Park was doing? But I remember sitting down with his longtime assistant or co-coach Darren Klapik, and I met Darren. Darren's brother Terry was a is a good friend of mine through university, and I remember asking Darren once if I could, I have questions. So I was sitting in his living room, picking his brain about stuff, and he asked me at one point. He said, "So, like, as Oak Park was always so good defensively." I said, "So," he asked me. He says, "Dean, what's your defensive philosophy?" And I've been doing this for two, 3 years only, and a defensive philosophy. So we're just trying to not let them score. Like, what do you mean, philosophy? I just don't want them to put the ball in the bucket.
And so
he started asking me questions and showing me things about, you know, the strategizing and the philosophy behind what you're trying to accomplish. And you're not just doing a drill. Like, things have purpose, and your team has to have a united common vision of what they're trying to do defensively to accomplish to stop them from putting the ball in the bucket. But Darren was great early on. And as I progressed, I ended up coaching, and I would say this is the mid-2000s, Martin Riley's kids. And Martin would come watch games. And I knew Martin because he had coached at Dakota my first year there. He wasn't teacher here, but he was the coach for 1 year. And his resume is second to none, like playing and coaching. And Martin, I would ask Martin for help the odd time, and he kind of tried to shrug me off at the start. Like, you don't need my help. You know what you're doing. It's like, Martin, I'm asking for some input here. Can you? And Martin, I consider Martin to be a very good friend of mine now. And he was nothing but generous and kind with his time and advice to me. And I sat at his dining room table way more than once, trying to get some help and some, like, what do we do here? What do we do here? And which was terrific. Like, I owe a lot to Martin for how I run things. And I know there's lots of coaches around the province right now that would say the same about him. But like, if you want, like, I just go and watch a game with him and sit with him watching somebody else play. There's nobody who's a quicker study and analyzer of what's going on about tendencies or what kids can and can't do and what teams can and can't do than sitting with Martin Riley. Again, I'm nothing but grateful for my time spent with him around the table, or sitting at a game, or in his basement talking about basketball. Like, it's terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's obviously a legend around him for a reason. And every person I know that's interacted with him in some way, whether it was when he played and they played against him, or they went to a camp with him as the instructor, I have my own memories of him as being in high school and playing when he just showed up one time and played. And special guy for sure.
I don't think him doing a podcast is on his radar, but if you can get him on, his stories are terrific.
It would be our honor to have him on. And so you said he's a good friend, so maybe nudge him a little bit, say, hey, you know what, I was on the podcast, your name came up. I would love to. I'll share my super quick story. It was at a camp, and man, just the way that he told stories, I was like, this guy's amazing. Like, just him standing there telling a story. And then he showed us like a few dribbling moves, and I was like, well, like, I've never met this guy before. It didn't matter. This guy's, you know, there's certain people who have a certain presence about them, certain confidence, certain ability, and it's detectable, like, instantly. Like, you just know, you're like, oh, this person, I should be listening to this person for what, you know, and he's one of those people for sure, 100%. Okay, so speaking of philosophies and values, I mean, you mentioned getting some of those early lessons from a volleyball coach. So, you know, understanding that, like, just coaching and leading people can come from anywhere. Talk to me about some of your values and philosophies. Like, they've probably changed over time with regards to, like, your basketball philosophies, like the, you know, on the court stuff. But, you know, talking, like, maybe, like, speaking first, like, maybe your off-court philosophies. Because one thing that if your name comes up, obviously people know in the basketball community, they know Dakota. And they say, man, Dean's such a nice guy. Everyone likes Dean, right? You've been known as, you're one of, like, the nice guys in the community, right? People enjoy being around you. But I think, you know, your personality is going to, it's going to elicit certain responses from people, right? And how you use that to your advantage to kind of navigate certain situations. And when you're coaching, that's essentially what you're doing. You know, you're trying to motivate people and you're trying to support them. And so starting there, you know, we talk about some of the things that you've learned and the philosophies and values that you have in coaching your teams that have been, maybe that have been with you from the start or have changed over time.
Yeah. That's a good question. Stuff does change over time for sure. Mm-hmm. Partly as people age or I age, and partly as the game changes and as kids change, and as my age, the kids don't change age, right? Like, I'm coaching the same age a kid now as I did when I was 24. So a 6-year age gap between me and my players when I, you know, was getting going, as opposed to now a, you know, 35, 40 year age gap between me and the kids. But at the end of the day, I would, like, I appreciate these things. People say I'm a nice guy.
Except when you're talking to the refs during the game, but continue.
but I would hate it if a kid were to leave my program and say that it was a waste of time, or that it was, I didn't get better as a basketball player, or I didn't enjoy my experience playing basketball at Dakota. That would bother me. I try to elicit, I am certainly not a, you know, I'm my way or the highway guy. Like I rely on my assistants. I rely on the players for feedback. I run stuff by them. We have player meetings. I have pull two or three kids aside and run stuff by them. I'm thinking this might be a good direction for us. What do you think? Mm-hmm. So I try to involve lots of people. But like, yeah, the nice comment is appreciated, but I'm also at the same time competitive. Mm-hmm. And there's a bit of a fire when I'm coaching, when I'm in practice and in games sometimes. And I think the people that only know me from classroom or only know me away from the gym and then see a little bit of that competitiveness, I think sometimes are a little surprised, but that's the name of the game, is to try to be competitive and try to do what you can to be successful.
Yeah. And so you mentioned the, you know, people who see you in the classroom. So you're not a phys ed guy. And like most people, most coaches are like phys ed guy, right? They're in the gym all the time. I'm in the gym. I'm a gym guy, right? You're a math teacher, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, how does that differ from, like, say, the general experience, or at least what you've heard? Because I know you know lots of phys ed teachers. So talk to me about that.
So often mistaken for a phys ed guy because I spend lots of time in the gym, but no, my degree, I have a degree in math, or a science degree in mathematics, and I've been a math teacher my whole career and love it. But sometimes people ask me what the difference is, or which is easier, which is harder. And I, to be honest, I don't think it's close. I think coaching is by far more challenging of an experience and an endeavor than teaching. So, and I tell this to my team, like, if I have 25 to 30 kids in a classroom and we're teaching pre-cal, essential math, apply, whatever we're doing, and I'm teaching everybody at once, just like I do my team. I'm teaching everybody some concept in math, but really at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if person sitting in the middle of the room gets it or doesn't get it, and person in the front does get it, person in the back doesn't. Mm-hmm. You hand out the test, the kids do what they do, and they each get an individual mark.
Yeah.
And so apart from a kid being like completely out of line and belligerent, and one person in the room does not have necessarily a significant impact on somebody else's success or non-success. Where in basketball, we either, at the end of the game, we all win the game or we all lose the game. And for us to win the game, the star of the team needs other kids to help them be successful. Everybody contributes. The role guys, you know, the guys who have a starting role, but they are a defensive stopper. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to work together to be successful, where that's not the case in classroom. Like, if you're really bright and I teach you, you're going to do really well.
Yeah.
And if somebody else doesn't do very well at all, if they're terrible at it and they miss a bunch of classes, it doesn't affect you.
No.
But if you have a bunch of kids who are missing practice and that you lose that kind of that unity and that momentum you have built as a group, it affects everybody. And I walk into a classroom, I'm told what to teach. I have a curriculum. I follow this. I do this next. I do this next. I do this next. In coaching, the kids show up, you run your tryout, and now you're going to lead your team. Okay, practice one. What are you doing? There's no curriculum. No one's telling you what to do. You have to figure out what they need help with. Mm-hmm. What you need to teach, how are you going to spend your time, and how can you best get everyone working together to be successful? I think it's a huge, so coaching is teaching, but I think coaching and getting everyone on board, working towards something that's a common goal, towards something that's bigger than themselves is much more challenging than teaching is. And teaching's hard to begin with. I think, yeah. I think coaching is a tougher gig.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I never really thought, like, you know, everything you say, I'm like, yeah, that's obvious. That's obvious. I've never actually given it any thought, you know. Mm-hmm. I think what tends to happen, or at least my initial thought, is, hey, I love coaching probably more than, and I love that challenge of trying to motivate people. So, you know, something that might be harder, you don't necessarily factor in the, but you enjoy it more necessarily. Like, so for me personally, I would enjoy the coaching more than being in the classroom. So even though it would be harder, I never actually gave a thought. It's a different question, right? Like, what's harder, not what do you enjoy more? You know what I mean? And so I never
I enjoy both.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's why I continue to do both for as long as I've done them at the same, yeah, the same school. Like I really love both. Like I love teaching math and I love seeing kids be successful there. And I love coaching.
So have you ever used your math knowledge or math perspective to benefit or help you coaching basketball ever?
Without question, for sure.
Okay, tell
me
how.
So numbers guy analytics. So I'm lucky that I have had one of my assistants, Drew Ressenholt, has been with me since like 2010, 2011. And it's one thing to go to practice every day, but you get to go to practice with one of my best friends. But Drew's a stats guy. Like I have a consistent guy, and you would appreciate this as a guy who runs stat trackers.
Absolutely.
So Drew keeps stats for our games. And it's not just point, like I got the whole slate. Like I've got everything.
Really?
And I can, yes. And so I go over that. And I remember a few years ago looking at it going, well, I knew these two kids scored the majority of points and like figured percentage wise what they score. And they were scoring about 60% of our points, which was fine. I said, and looked at it some more and went, yeah, they're only taking 40% of the shots. So went to the team, like, how come these two guys are scoring 60% of our points with 40% of the shots? You guys are taking 60% of the shots and scoring 40% of our points. So what's wrong with this equation here?
Yeah.
So we tried to focus and like, so now it's not just me saying, get these two guys the ball.
Yes.
It's backed up. Like you're taking more shots and you're less successful.
Yeah.
That's not good for us.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying don't shoot. I'm saying let's play to our strengths here and get the ball in the hands of the guys who are having more success for us right now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I'm lucky with that one.
Yeah, no kidding, like, yeah.
Consistency, success, I think, is also consistency of, like people use the term program, but like Drew's been with me since 2010 or 11. That's a long time for one high school assistant to be in the same spot.
Yeah.
I have Chit Goswami, who's been with me for, I don't know, 8-10 years, maybe more. And Chit is as knowledgeable about basketball as anybody. Like he's not your average assistant. Like he's coached provincial teams. Like
And in the Wolves program for a long
super
time
knowledgeable,
as well.
And the more people I can put around, I'm smart enough to put smart people around me.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
Like to be around people that are committed and successful and have good things to say and good things to offer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Chit for sure is in that boat.
Yeah, 100%. Chit's been in the game for a long time. And like I said, you did the Wolves stuff for a long time as well, provincial teams.
Yes.
Like, and that's an assistant for you.
yeah. Who has an assistant with that kind of resume?
Correct. I mean, maybe for a season, but like not for an extended period of time, right?
And
Yeah. And I think like you kind of mentioned that when it comes to, you know, you call it a program, but it's a program is built around consistency, right? And so you're going to have years where you're just not that very, you're not good, but you know, years where you're very good. Right. And you know, the year you guys won the provincials, that was an interesting year because I remember like, again, you know, my perspective being like, I just finished playing, I guess it would have been the year, 2 years or a year after.
Yeah. We won.
And
March of 02.
It was 02, yeah. And I was a graduate in 01. And this is, I'll tell you what my memory of it was. And I'm going to ask what yours is. Irfan is going to destroy these guys. Their guards cannot play with them. It does not matter. Irfan's just awesome. Daniel's going to kill Dakota. That's what I remember. Now, You tell me before you fast forward to that moment, what do you remember about that entire season? Like, or maybe let me ask, what's the first thing that came to mind when I started talking about that?
I am right now at school in the math office at my desk here. And as you say, and on my bulletin board straight ahead of me, I have that team championship picture and it's for sure. I've been coaching a long time and I've won one. Yeah. And I've had some people, I mean, only won one. So winning's hard.
It is. Yes.
The other teams are trying to win too. Right. So I'm fortunate. I think I've been closer at winning and have had other teams that I thought had a better chance of winning it all than that year, for sure. For sure.
Absolutely.
Of the teams I've gone to, let's say the Final Four with, that was the team that was probably least likely to win. Not so much based on them, but just based on the other teams that were in the Final Four that year.
Mm-hmm. But who else was in the Final Four? Who'd you guys beat in the game before?
We played Oak, and Daniel played Sturgeon. Was it Sturgeon or Silver Heights at the time?
It's probably Silver Heights still.
Silver.
Yeah.
So, but like we pick our team and we go to the West. We were in the Daniel Mack tournament, which is in mid-December. Mm-hmm. So it's one of our first real tests. And I remember which game in the tournament was. We played Daniel Mack in their own tournament. And I think it was 18-0 for them before we scored. So, this didn't go very well. So we lose by 25 or 30. And then we play them again a week later in the Westman Classic. So now if Daniel wasn't public, the Westman Classic is public. Like there's a lot of people there watching. And I'm thinking to myself, well, this can't go any worse. Wrong. And it was 24-0 for Daniel before we scored. This is the varsity boys basketball game at the Westman Classic. And we're down 24-0 off the hop. So we kind of lick our wounds and carry on. And early January, we're in the Piper Classic. And this is our first look at Oak Park. And we score first, which is comforting. And we go up 5-0. And I think we're down 43-15 at half. Like Oak just pounded us in the first. And we shake hands at the end of the game. We lose by a bundle. And in the handshake line, Darren Klapik, again, friend of mine, shakes my hand and holds me in the handshake line and says, well, that'll teach you for going up 5-0. Like, well, so we play out January and we have a couple of kids who at the end of January decide that it's not for them and they decide to leave. And I remember we had a team meeting in my classroom about what are we doing? Like, what's the goal? What's the big vision here? Mm-hmm. And once we laid that out, we started asking questions about how are we going to do it? What does this look like? What does practice have to look like? Who are the key players here? How are we going to get this done? And that meeting kind of really redirected us and set the tone. And we started putting together a real run of games where we're winning a whole bunch. And we lost to River East, who had Chris Dick, because they ended up, he was in grade 11, and they ended up winning provincials the next year. But we, after that meeting, that was our only loss. We didn't lose again.
Really?
So we finished the year, I'll say, I think we were 23-8, but we didn't lose again after January. Oh, sorry, the one game to River East.
Yeah, yeah.
And so all year, there were two teams. It was Oak Park and Daniel Mack. And they were beating everybody. And the only losses they had were to each other. But Daniel had Irfan, who is arguably the best player we've seen in Manitoba in the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. And he was terrific. So we go into the Final Four. And we actually, heading into provincial, scrimmaged with, I think it was Silver Heights at the time, and Kirby. We scrimmage with them and we go into our Final Four game and we're playing Oak. And I just remember I thought we were really prepared to play that game. Like we knew what they wanted to do. We knew who did what, new sub rotations, new tendencies. I thought we were really well prepared and we won the game by 6 or 7 in a really low scoring kind of grinding game. I think it was like we were both in the 60s or high 50s. Like it was low scoring, a grinding game. Win that, and we're playing Daniel. And in those days, the final was the next night, right? Like it's not like now where you play your final four game on a Saturday and you go, or a Friday and you go Monday, or Saturday, Monday. It's no Friday, Monday now. But for us, it was Friday, Saturday. So we win. We got into the booth there. We're watching Daniel play Silver, and like I can't tell you how many times the crowd was going crazy for something Irfan did.
Of course.
I turned to our assistants and said, like, our job tomorrow night is to limit the number of times the crowd reacts that way. Like, we just can't let him go off and just start doing all these things that Irfan does. So we had a practice Saturday morning and just kind of a walkthrough. But the main message was, if Irfan is around you, just try not to be involved in the game.
Yeah.
Just go away. Like, don't, if you have the ball and he's guarding you, try to get rid of it. Like, if he's around the ball, it's bad for us. And I'm sure the people came assuming they were going to pound us. Like, they had beaten us soundly twice. And not only that, we couldn't score.
Yeah.
Like, it was 18-0, 24-0, and we can't score. So we're at U of W. And I remember being at the top of the railing, looking on at the girls' game, waiting for our game to start. And I was standing with Greg Bouchard, who was one of the coach for Daniel at the time, and Bill Wedlake came up to us and he put his arm around us and he says, "This is going to be great, guys." He said, "Two U of W guys playing in my gym." And he was so happy that we were both there. And
yeah,
but like, I'm sure, again, people thought we were going to be pounded.
Yeah.
And we won the tip and we went down and we got the ball. I think we got it into one of our two bigs. It was Alexi Finley, we called Q.
Yeah.
He was so big and so strong.
Yeah.
And the other one was AJ Gervais, who was borderline 6'11". And I forget which of the first, who got the first bucket. One of the two of them got it. We scored and we're up 2-0. And I can't tell you the relief for going up 2-0 after the previous two games against them. We managed to keep it close the whole way and we were up 2 at half and 1-3. And I think it's one of the bigger upsets in recent memory here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, again, is like the way I remember it. And tell me this, Dean, like, I know in my last years, there was no shot clock. Were we still rocking with no shot clock that year?
That year was no shot clock.
Yeah. So
now, people would assume that maybe we held the ball against them. And we, like, the score was in the 80s. It was 86-83. Like, that's not, even by shot clock standards, that's a high-ish scoring game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
right, like,
sure.
So we didn't hold the ball.
No.
We certainly weren't engaging in a track meet and didn't want to go up and down. We took our time in the half court when we could, but we tried to be as patient as we could and get the ball into AJ and Q.
That's what I remember. And correct me if I'm wrong, Q was did he not get MVP? Was it Q?
He was MVP, and he was somewhat motivated by the fact that he was left off the high school top 10 list. He wasn't too impressed. There were lots of good players that year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what I remember from that game is just your guards just not really dribbling because Irfan's around. It's like, hey, just pass it up. Like, you know, he'd get, because again, Irfan did this his whole career. He just picked people's pockets. And so he was playing at another level in high school. So I just remember you guys just being very cautious. Like, it was a very cautiously played game. Like I said, it wasn't necessarily a stalled game. No.
Yep.
It was, you guys were just like, look, we're going to make these like very, very cautious decisions and we're going to get it to our bigs and we're just going to play out of that. And that was kind of like, it was very, you could see it. And as a result of that, like you, like you said, you get the players out of there. You took Irfan kind of out of the game to a certain extent.
Well, I don't know if we take him out of the game, but we certainly tried to limit how much he was doing.
Correct. And, like, he wasn't causing as much of the defensive chaos. Like, if you just said, hey, like, dribble the ball up and do this. And
like, I think in about a month earlier in Luther, he had a quadruple double in three quarters.
Yeah.
So like he had a good game against us, but not that. And he got hurt midway through the fourth quarter in that championship game, and he sat out for a bit, got taped and came back and couldn't go.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah.
And you know, I just remember because I've interviewed her fan for the podcast, and he actually brought that up. He's like, you know, I was injured. I rolled my ankle. Remember that? So, but yeah, that's all part of the game, right?
Our point guard got hurt in the semifinal, didn't play at all. Right, David Harvey White got hurt and didn't go.
Yeah.
But leading up to that, I had a kid on the team come to me and said he had something he wanted the team to listen to for motivation as we were heading into playoff potentials.
Okay.
Okay, I need to vet this.
Like, yeah,
I'm
not
playing this for everybody. And so it was a clip from the movie Any Given Sunday with Al Pacino.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I listened to it, and he brought it to me this is 2002. He brought it to me on a cassette.
Of course, yeah.
So, and then we carried around a cassette player, and we listened to this thing.
No way.
Before every game of playoffs and provincials. And for playoffs, this is the old Cloverleaf days, or it was Dakota, Glenlawn, CJS, Richmond, Massey. So we ended up winning provincials this year. We're third in our zone. Like, we were behind Glenlawn, and we were behind, and I think Richmond was in first after regular season. So we listened to it, and the first time we listened to it, there's a couple of snickers and chuckles, and the guys are kind of smirking a little bit. But now we're listening to it for the sixth, seventh time in the change room at U of W. There's no laughing. There's no snickering. The guys are dialed in. But I'm listening to it with this player. I think it was Igor Juric that gave it to me, and we are in my car listening before we go in, and it got stuck in my car. And so now we're finicking with this cassette player, and don't break the tape, and but you get it out, and it's all good. So that team actually, that was 2002 and 2000. So the 20-year anniversary, we gathered for a reunion.
Nice.
And, AJ flew in from Calgary, and Trevor Shaw flew in from Ottawa, and we had a great time together. We had a tour of the school. We played a little bit of basketball. We had dinner together, and it was awesome.
So who were some of the coaches that were with you on that squad?
On that team were former players mostly. It was Dean Sacco, Corey Rothenberger, Brian Kidd.
Okay.
I'm looking at the picture now. Yes, that was them. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. No, that's
all former players.
Yeah, that's interesting. So when you, or have you, I'm sure you have, heard that speech since winning, and did it bring back like a feeling of, like, did you get that buzz?
Yeah, not really. I've heard it again, a little bit. But
it brought back memories.
It sure, but there's other things that bring back memories of that day more so than the audio recording.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but just being with those guys again was special.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, like you said, winning is hard. Winning is very hard. Yeah, and like I remember, you know, you've had teams before. Like, oh man, the Dakotas—they're loaded. They got a great team, and you know, you didn't win with those teams. And it's such an interesting, you know, when though, like, there's the times when the team that's supposed to win wins. You know, and that happens. That happens often, right? And so, like you said, your story was very much an underdog story. Like, it truly was. Like, again, I remember, I was like, these guys are going to get smoked.
For sure. And you weren't alone.
Yeah, everyone thought that. We were shocked. And you're right. You know, we got to limit our fans, like, you know, plays where he gets the crowd involved, because, you know, everybody, myself included, who just played against him, was like, when he did stuff, you were just blown away. Like, and you would be, oh wow, that's what I mean.
Right? He'd hit a three. He'd hit deep threes.
Yeah.
He'd take you off the dribble. He'd pull up. He'd get a layup.
Yep.
He'd pass to anybody. Like, you'd find anybody that's open. Yeah. He'd steal. He'd come from the weak side on rebounds, poke the ball out of your hand, and now he's got like.
Yeah.
Like I said, he's as good as anybody we've seen in 30 years.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I just remember he would win the crowd, you know, that's something that he did. The people are just like, this guy's amazing. Right. And so you, just that, the fact that you noted that, you're like, hey, we gotta just limit him as much as possible from like wowing the crowd. And that's going to give us an advantage, because no one wanted you guys to win.
Sorry.
Like, I mean, outside, I said, no one wanted you guys to win outside of the Dakota people, but like everyone else is like, we don't want that. And I remember being like disappointed. I'm like, oh man, like Gerfans, and he still did stuff. Like, it wasn't like he didn't, but you know, like,
and they won the year before.
They did. They won the year before. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So,
and they won with, they had a big Dwight.
Dwight Brissett.
Yes. So he was big, and thinking like, oh, well, when we won, we had two bigs.
Yep.
Again, we had guys coming off the bench that were also big.
Yeah.
But it helps.
Oh, yeah, it's basketball, it helps, right?
And they didn't have a matchup for anybody AJ size.
No.
Like to defend and play against somebody who's borderline 6'11", you need someone who's about 6'6".
Yes.
And even that, like 5 inches is still, that's a lot. I think their biggest guy was 6'2", 6'3". And
yeah, they had a super
small
team.
You're giving up a lot of size there.
Yeah, they had a small team. And like you said, Q was not a small man. He was very big, so and great hands. But no, that's so
great, I mean, hands.
Yeah, great hands. Yeah, that great was his hands. Thing, right? Just keep the ball high. I remember playing with him like later on after, and he kept playing for a while. And he was tough. He would come into the gym out of shape. Didn't matter. It's men's. And he would just like be physical inside, get offensive rebounds, miss his own shot, get his own rebound, put it back in. Good passer. Out of the post, he started to develop a little bit of that. I'm not sure he had it in high school, but
I've often said about him, if you line our guys up at one end line and said race to the other end, he's last. but if you lined them up and said you had to move, the race was only going to be 2 feet long. His first step for a big guy.
Yeah.
Was very quick.
Yeah.
And so when he caught it and he could catch and he could finish and he's so big, he would bump and displace you.
Yep.
But he would do it so fast, and his first step to covering 2 feet was very quick for a big guy.
Yep.
And you couple that with taking a bump from a guy who's well over 200 pounds and he displaces you, dislodges you, he's going to finish.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So I want to speak about some of those other teams that you had that you didn't win at all. but you guys had success, right? And maybe some of those teams are teams that you actually are memorable to you, but it wasn't because you guys were great. There's other reasons. So, you know, when I start, you know, you can kind of go sense where I'm going with this question, but who are some of the most memorable teams that you've had throughout the years? And then what do you remember about them?
Oh, the teams that went to the Final Four are so memorable, but like I have fun coaching. Like, yes, the goal is to win, but it only happens to one team every year. That doesn't mean everything along the way is a loss. And I try to keep in touch with lots of kids that I've coached, or they try to keep in touch with me. So I have lots of good memories along the way with all the teams. For sure. The one kid that sticks out to me, and I hate the question, who's the best kid you've ever coached? And I don't think that's fair to answer and to kind of disparage some of the hard work that lots of kids have done to try to be, to improve their own game. So I don't like the question, who's the best kid I've coached, but I will tell you the hardest working kid I've ever coached is Phil Labongo. And it's, I don't think it was close. Like his drive to be better at this is something that kids today who think they work hard, they have no idea until they would watch this guy do a workout, and not just a basketball workout, a weightlifting workout, a shooting workout, a running workout. He was as into basketball as any kid I've ever been a part of. And my personal time with him is something I'm going to remember forever. Like, and he was close with me. He was close with my family. He's just, he's a kid I will never forget. That's for sure. We could make the podcast about him. Lots of so many good stories. I remember playing in the, I don't know if it was a final or a semifinal in the St. Mattel tournament at Glenlawn. And we're playing against Garden City and my friend Phil Penner. I think the score at the end was 63-58. That was for two players. Phil had 63 and Marko Milosevic had 58. Yes. And I think we won 103-99. Something stupid, right? But the two of them put on a display.
Yeah.
And Philip ended up with, I think he had 63, and the game ended, and we're at Glenlawn, and my buddy John Wolf looks over and he says, "Dean, I don't think anybody filmed it." And this was in 2010, and there was no recording of it. There was no live stream, so the game is lost. I have the score. I have the score sheet.
Yeah,
but there was no. There's no digital record of it, which is a shame. And but I also remember driving. My family and I were driving to a friend's house for a swim. Philip was in grade 11, maybe, and our car broke down. Coincidence, right at the entrance to the school. So I managed to get the car into the parking lot, and I called the family we were going to go visit, and they were going to come pick up my wife and the kids. And I was going to wait there for CAA, and car drives up, and it's Philip. He gets out of the car. I said, what are you doing here? He said, I saw you standing here and thought you might need help. I said, explain what was going on. I'm like, well, I don't think you can fix my car. And he says, well, I'll wait for you. I'll wait with you till CAA comes. I said, okay, great. And what are you doing today? I said, why are you driving by? And he points across the street at the apartment block. And he says, I know two things. Their front door is unlocked, and there's 13 flights of stairs. So I'm doing stairs today.
Wow.
So he was there. He was going to run stairs. And not just stairs, like up your bleachers and back.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like from one. Floors. No, there's 13. So there's flights there. He says, I'm just going to work on that today. Oh, okay.
Wow.
And I could tell you so many more things like that about him. His work ethic and just the kind of person he was, stuff I'll remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Oddly enough, I know his sister, but I just remember him from playing. Like, I didn't really know him. I just remember how, mm-hmm. how talented he was. Like, he's super talented. Like you said, like you could tell, like he was a hard worker, right? Like there was no question about that. What year was that, that he was his 11 and 12?
He graduated 2010.
Okay. Yeah. So that was.
So we lost in the Final Four that year to St. Paul's. They had Joey Nitichorik.
It was Joey. Okay.
Tanner Droward.
Yeah. 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 Speaking of two, also again, good. two bigs.
Amir Ali. Yeah. Good point.
But
I miss him. I miss Philip to this day.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, those for who don't know, like Philip's passed, right? So this is,
yes.
Yeah. It's always tough. I mean, like, I remember when I asked Ross Wedlake a similar question, and oddly enough, he didn't say I hated it, but he said, I'm not going to answer that. And he gave me an answer like you. And he talked about a player who was just super hardworking and he remembers to this day, and he has a connection with him. Yep. And I think that's, I think there's always, I always get this from, I always go back to Kirby, but I know many of people, I think Colleen said it too, but the journey with basketball is like first, you think it's about basketball. And again, some people have the insight way beyond this. But, you know, as a kid, this is definitely what you think. And I remember going through this myself and having other people experience this. But then later on, you're like, this is nothing to do with basketball, right? Like, this is like all things in life. This is just about people and your connection to them and, you know, going through things with them. That's why this podcast is, you know, I've appreciated this podcast so much because I get to hear, you know, personal stories and people opening up about the experiences that they've had. Through basketball,
it's all about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can create good relationships, you can help kids attain the next level. But like I said at the beginning about me, you said about me being a nice guy. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not interested in doing this at the expense of relationships.
Yep.
Like I want kids to have a good experience. I want when they're done for them to want to have a conversation with me about anything 5, 10, 20 years after they've played. That would be important to me. And I'm lucky. I've got some former players that have kind of stuck around as assistant coaches or come and gone as assistant coaches or just come to the odd game. And some have become people I would consider to be good friends of mine to this day. So it's a bit of an age gap, but like I appreciate those relationships very much.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially when you've been at one place for so long, right? Like you know, when you start talking about legacy, community, you talk about program and the values and making those connections, that's how that stuff gets formed, right? Is the fact that you can still be there and someone who was a high school kid could drive by and be like, you know what? I feel comfortable going in the gym. I know Coach Favoni's probably in there practicing. Like, I'm going to go take a look. And you would be like, hey, how's it going? Like, how have you been? Right. Or, actually, well, this is just a question I'll ask you. Have you ever coached, like, I guess you're getting close to that age. Has anyone come by? I mean, you've had kids where some people that you've coached, their kids have I know, I don't know if you're that old yet, but you're close.
I'm not close. I'm not close to that age. I'm there.
I was going to say, yeah.
So I haven't coached a father and a son yet, okay. But I've taught people and then coached their sons.
Okay. Okay.
So that's happened, and it's been the, yeah. So for sure.
That must be a little bit wild. Like, hey, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have this thing. No, absolutely. So I have this thing whenever people say, man, time flies. And I say, yeah, I mean, it does. But like, realistically, if you think back of all your life, like so much stuff has happened. Like, so, you know, it flies, but it doesn't really. But when you have those moments, you must be like, oh, wow. Like,
yeah.
It's like a moment, like it's like a slap in the face, like, okay, like yeah, I'm well, here now. This person is an adult, or I'm teaching them, or, you know?
Yep. Or for those, I'll tell a story to my team now about a kid that, or a former player that reached out and wished us good luck or congratulated us on something. And I'll say, oh, I coached him in, and if I say like 2010, they'll go, oh my God, that's old.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like,
2010. I said, I was talking to a guy that graduated in 97 the other day, and he was, he wanted our schedule because he wants to come watch a game. And,
and so
I tell them that, like 97, like,
yeah, they're blown
them,
away.
That was forever ago.
But that's what I said when I opened the podcast, when I had graduated and played college and I was coaching in high school, and I saw, and I still was like, I don't know, who's this old timer? Seems like it's like, you know, your perspective as a child or a teenager or a young adult is way different as when you've grown a bit. But just speaking about the community and legacy, I mean, in the bio there, I mentioned, you know, the big fundraising initiative that you were a part of there at Dakota, in building, you know, there's a beautiful field there now. And then there's that outdoor court that's, you know, named after Dale Bradshaw. So, you know, tell us a little bit about just how that even happened and how it came to be.
I think like lots of good ideas and good things, it was kind of, I wouldn't say an accident, but it was certainly nothing that on the outset we planned to do here. And I have a lot of involvement with the Manitoba Marathon. I was on their board for 6 years, and I'm part of the committee that puts on the race every year. I've done that every year since I started teaching, and Mr. Jerry Alchina got me involved in that. And I came out of a meeting, I think I was at Sorrento's on Grant, and we had a year-end marathon wrap-up meeting, and I was going to my car, and it was pouring rain, not just like, you know, I'm going to get a little, like, it was enough that I was like pausing at the door, like, okay, when am I timing my run to the car?
Yeah.
And there was a guy came up behind me and tapped me on the shoulder, guy I knew from the meeting. And he said, oh, Dean, look at it outside. He said, this looks like a great excuse for you to buy me a beer. I said, oh, okay. So he sat down. His name is Les Weens. He's a Dakota grad from, I think, in the mid 70s. And he said, do you ever get guest speakers at school? And I said, yeah, from time to time. And he said, what would you do if I told you I could get Coach Carter from the movie Coach Carter? And I said, oh, that'd be great. And he had heard Coach
Hold on. Sorry. I got to interrupt you. Yeah. Did you believe him at the time? Like, oh, that'd be great. Were you like, this guy's, come on.
No, I would listen some more.
Okay.
And yeah, he had been at an event and Coach Carter spoke, and he says he's pretty dynamic. Like, I think this would be good for high school. And so Les and I talked for a bit and said, okay, well, let's get him to come to the school. And I thought he'd come to the school. We'd have the local community, the Lance or the Metro, whatever you call it now, would cover it. We'd get his picture in the paper and that'd be that. And he said, well, why don't we use him to raise some money? So then we started talking about what we want to raise money for. And then it kind of snowballed into like, our field sucks. Like we have a field outside. We have a massive grassed area in a big L-shaped, and there's nothing there. Like there's two soccer goalposts at the time that aren't the right distance apart. And the field is terrible. Like we don't play anything there. Like it used to be, they tell me from predates my time at Dakota, that it used to be the dumping ground for construction of new homes.
No way.
So it was like stuff was leaching to the top, concrete, like it's bad. So we said, why don't we try to do, and then we just started brainstorming, and then we sat down, we ended up hiring an architect. One thing leads to another. And now the school division gives me, and at the time, the vice principal here, Robbie Major, gives us the go-ahead. I think they gave us the go-ahead because they didn't think anything was going to happen.
Yeah.
But they gave us the go-ahead to start fundraising for this. And it was like, oh, okay, we're going to put in an artificial turf field. And again, one thing leads to another. And now we have an artificial turf, full-size CFL field with lights. We have an outdoor basketball court named after Dale Bradshaw with lights. We have a cricket batting cage, which was the first thing to go in. We have a tennis court, pickleball courts. We have an out. We have a community garden. We have an Indigenous learning circle. We have stands. We have a video tower. Like, and some of this is, once you get going with the fundraising and people realize this is actually going to happen, other people are willing to contribute.
Of course.
But we ran these gala dinners. We ran five gala dinners to raise community awareness and money. And the first gala dinner was Coach Carter, who was as dynamic as Les had promised. He was terrific. He was good at the gala dinner. He was great when he spoke in the afternoon to the kids. Like, terrific. And he told me a story before he went on that when he was coaching, he had a rule that nobody dunks against us. He says, nobody dunks against us. Like, I don't know how you control that, but nobody dunks. And he says, he told his team, if you dunk on me, he says, you guys are running home. Like, you're not getting on the bus. I don't know how far their school was, but he's not getting on the bus. You're gonna have to run home behind the bus. So middle of the game, some kid on the other team has a breakaway and he's going to dunk the ball. And Coach Carter tells me the story that a kid from his team left the bench and tackled the guy to prevent the dunk, to save them from running home.
Come on.
So he tells me before he goes on to, you know, entertain our school body. But we had Coach Carter was great. We had John Montgomery from Amazing Race Canada, the gold medalist in skeleton, and Jay Onwright from TSN. We had a Jets with Dale Hawerchuk and Mark Scheifele. We had a few Bombers. And then the last one we did in 2018 was Donovan Bailey, Olympic and world champion.
Yeah.
And got to reconnect with him the other day at his book signing at McNally.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah, it's great. So that the field now has transformed our school and the culture here. And it's we've gone from nothing to an amazing facility. And at the end, when we were really searching for the last bit of money to put us over the top, Dan Murray from Murray Chevaux came through. And that's why the field is called Murray Field at Dakota Collegiate.
Got it. Well, I'll tell you this right now. So, I mean, it's transformed the school, but I would go so far as to say it's helped transform the community, like outside of the school, right? Because, you know, I know for a fact that I don't know this for a fact, but did the football program not even start there until the field was there, or was it there before?
No, we had a team before we had a field, and they played all away games.
Got it. But I think the team has had some decent success in the last
The past season was our first 4A. Yeah. They call it 4A or the top division.
Yeah. But it's kind of been like moving up kind of over the years type thing. And, right. Yeah.
Yes. They started in the third tier. I think they won that, moved up and won the second tier. They have stayed there again. And then they've been gradually getting a little bit more, a little better every year.
Yeah. And then I know for soccer, the whole school division plays like their whole season there, like all the games will be
urban soccer is in the spring and the weather is a crapshoot in the spring. So if you go and play on a grass field on a nice day, fine. But then it rains or you go down there too quickly after the thaw, you chew it up. And you could be off it to let it kind of nurture itself back to good standing again. You could be off for a week or 2 weeks, and the soccer season isn't long enough to allow that. So they just put every game here. It's great.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like, again, it's absolutely changed. And again, you mentioned the pickleball, you mentioned, you know, the basketball court obviously is there. Like, it's anytime you can, you know, you have a presence like that in the area, it's going to affect change. Like, I brought up the football team just because it's an easy example of like, okay, this led to this, but there's all sorts of stories because, you know, I know for a fact that, you know, when you talk to people, they'll say, oh, like I got my start playing here, for example, or, maybe someone's conversation is now going to be like, hey, when I started playing basketball, my brother took me to, you know, the Dakota, the Dale Bradshaw court, and they, you know, just shot around. Like, that would be like their first kind of, or one of their memories, you know?
I love driving through and seeing people playing cricket, people watching cricket, a game on, the basketball court's full. I love just watching kids play.
Yeah.
And we've had Valor FC has come and used it as practice. Some of the Bombers come individually and do some workouts there, and it's well used. It's great.
No, absolutely. And it's a legacy. I mean, that kind of stuff is like you said, there's a, you know, driving by, it must give you just like a nice, you're like, man, this is special. This is cool. Like, you know, cause, had it not been for that, rainy day or the meeting you're
Correct.
At or
yeah.
whatever,
and
many,
the,
many
and
of
having
things.
Somebody like having somebody like Robbie Major at the time, the two of us devoting that kind of time to getting it done and the ups and downs along the way. It wasn't a straight line to raising that kind of money. I'll tell you that there was money given, money taken back, money given, money raised, private, public. And there's supportive people at the school with our principal, Jill Mathey, as well. Like, it's something we're really proud of here.
Yeah, it's a community effort in that case, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a few questions. We're coming close to an end here.
Sure.
So I'll ask you this straight off the top. Tell me your funniest basketball story or whatever comes to mind when I ask you that. It can be,
funny.
It doesn't have to be on the court either. Or it doesn't have to be, you know, like it can be anything, just something
like
that comes to mind.
There's lots of little things. Like, if I've done this long enough that I'm not doing it if I don't laugh. So it's nothing outlandish all the time, but I try to laugh most games and practices, or at least make fun of something going on. I remember at Canada Games, and again, this Philip Longo story, we were in line during the opening ceremonies, and everybody got to meet the Prime Minister, who at the time was Stephen Harper, and the Governor General. So we're in line, and Philip's in line close to me, and everyone's just saying hello, nice to meet you kind of thing, and I think Philip says to him, I'm gonna have your job one day, to the Prime Minister.
Wow.
And Stephen Harper, who I don't think is known for his great
no he's pretty dry
comedic wit, but he comes back at Philip right away with, well, you can have it.
Very nice. That's cool.
I remember getting ready to go to Luther one year, and you had to do a skit and you prepare some video for Luther. And we thought we'd take one of our smaller guys, his name is Dean Sacco, we'd have him. He would go up and dunk. We'd make it look like he's dunking, but he was going to run and jump off somebody's back. Like, you'd get down on his on all fours and launch himself up and dunk it. And it was great. So Dean went up and did this. Well, Dean jumped a little higher and caught a little more air than he anticipated, and collided with the backboard.
Come on.
And yes, comes tumbling down, and he was fine. He was fine.
Oh, and in preparation hold on. So he's going up to dunk, and he like is too high, and he kind of bails on, hits the side of the backboard.
Oh yeah, his shoulder is.
Or like over.
No, not to go over. No.
Oh, okay,
no,
okay. No, like, no, I mean, no, like no, over no. the rim. Sorry, over the rim.
Yeah, he's rim height. He's hitting backboard.
And oh, okay, so he's
he
falls. I get you.
But
as
we're, I knew this question about funniest moment was coming, and it's at his expense. But I chatted with him to make sure it was okay to tell the story, and he says, "Yeah, but you make sure you tell them the ball went in." made the bucket. So
nice.
Like, I don't know about funny. Like, I try to have fun all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't even know when I started a tradition of having the guys get together for a team meal over the winter break. And so I make a big thing of chili, and we get together at somebody's house, and just to do something away from basketball. Like, I think that's something that guys look back and remember and appreciate. So
I just
try
absolutely.
To make the experience memorable.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when I say, you know, Dean's a nice guy. I think all the things you've said are the things that I'm talking about, right? It's like, you're doing things for the community. You're making sure people feel comfortable. You know, you're checking in with your team. Like, these types of things obviously extend outside of just basketball, right? It's who you are, who you've become, over these years. Right. And so I know some referees may not think during the game, you know, Dean's nice, but they probably say, hey, you know what, I run into Dean after, he's fine. It's just everyone gets competitive, right? And so,
correct.
You know, I judge people off of their actions, and I can tell someone that say that they're nice, even if they're not like kind, you know, you are both kind and nice.
Thank you.
I really have always appreciated just being around you, man, and just talking with you. It's always like, you know, you're one of the few people, and yes, I'm throwing shots at the people who aren't like this, but like, you see Dean and you're like, hey, how's it going? Like, it's, you know, you're not like, oh man, there's Dean. Oh, you're shopping and you're like, I'm just going to go over here, you know? And let's be honest, like, we all have some people like that, that are in our lives, right? And so you're not one of those people, but yeah. So
I think that was one of the stories. That was one of the lessons. I think it was Phil Hudson who had taught me that said, do you want to conduct yourself as a teacher and a coach so that 10 years from now, when a former player or student sees you across the street and they don't, and you don't see them, but they see you, will they cross the street to say hi to you?
Wow. Yeah. That's it right there. That's exactly what I was talking about. That's a good, well, you succeeded. We'll say that much. You've succeeded. So, on that note, I mean, that's kind of leads us into the last question here. And so I like to end the podcast with advice. And I mean, you've given a ton just through your stories. That last one right there was a piece of advice that a coach or even just a person, a teammate, a boss, anyone can take and apply. So pretty much I really like to end the podcast with some advice. And so let's just imagine that you're in a room and you're in front of coaches and they're hungry for your knowledge. You've been in the game for over 30 years. What I would like you to do is think about three things that you'd like to leave them with, right? So three ideas, concepts, principles of things that are gonna help them in their coaching journey and lessons that you've learned along the way. Now, it can be something that you've already talked about in this and you wanna elaborate, or it can be something brand new. So what would you say to them?
I would say one of the biggest pieces of advice, and I think this is relevant today because the game has changed in terms of when I started, the only place that kids could play was school. So the only places that basketball coaches existed were school, and they were predominantly school teachers. So now there's coaches needed at school. There's coaches needed at community centers, community clubs. There's coaches needed on club teams. It's exploded. So many more opportunities for kids to play. So many more coaches needed. Like, I'm sure every basketball convener at a club has heard, has had to utter the line, hey, we need a coach or a parent to step up here or this team isn't going to run. And so somebody says yes, and they don't know what they're doing, but they're willing to learn and to give it a go, which is fantastic. But I, even at this point in my career, I still read, I still click on YouTube videos and try to get information that way, and I still go to clinics. But I think the best way to learn is by talking directly with somebody. Book an appointment to talk to somebody who's at your level, above your level, whatever that means. Ask if you can attend somebody else's practice. And I do this often. Kirby Shep and I are good friends, and he's willing to let me come in and I go to a bunch of practices before my season starts. And I kind of watch and listen and like, oh, why do you do that? I've talked to Mike Rainbow before and gotten some information. But when I was coaching provincial team with Kirby Shep and Jeff LePayne, well, there's no better coaching education program than working with two guys like that for a summer. And they probably don't know this, but when I was coaching with them, they'd say something. I'd have a notebook off to the side. Oh, I really liked what they did. And I would write it down. And I would do that over and over for the two summers we spent together. And it's valuable information. Like, there's lots of coaches who would be willing to have other people come in and watch, or willing to kind of talk to them about stuff. Like, I've benefited so much from people like Darren Klapik and Martin Riley, like I said before. Nick Lowther, I coached with him provincial team. I was his assistant, and I coached against him when he was a player.
I was gonna say,
we're good friends now. And we talk basketball all the time. And when he was coaching the Vincent Massey team, it wasn't routine, but like more than once or twice a week, we'd get home from practice in the evening, call each other and just compare notes. Like, how was it today? What did you work on today? And like, that's really valuable. If you can get in a room with somebody, and you can't be shy about asking, ask somebody you know, ask somebody you don't know. Coaches, have you met a basketball coach that doesn't like talking about basketball?
No, like most love it. Most won't shut up about it.
they're going to want to talk, and they're going to want to share with some information with you. And like, I teach in a school with Eric Sung, whose wife coaches the Bison women's team, and he coaches very successful here. And he loves basketball almost as much as Graham Bodner does. I'm in the same building with him. We talk basketball often, but we also have a standing policy that during the season, we sit with each other during games. Like, hey, I got so-and-so can't make it today as an assistant. Do you want to sit with us today? Great. Oh, wow. And so we sit with each other during games. And I'm not sure how useful I am to him when I sit, but like a bit of a sounding board sometimes, and him the same for me. So that would be that. I think the biggest thing is call somebody up, book an appointment with somebody, talk to them about what they do, ask the questions of topics and things that you think you are deficient in, that you're struggling with, book appointment, go watch somebody coach a practice. And if you're a club coach, go watch a high school, go like flip it around, like just go and be immerse yourself for a while watching somebody else do something. Invite somebody in and or get an assistant that you know for sure is more experienced and more knowledgeable than you. And that is that takes some courage to have an assistant that you know at the outset is more knowledgeable than you, because now you're thinking, you could be thinking back your mind like, oh, what do they think? But you get someone that you can trust who's got a knowledge base that can help you develop.
I love that, man. I love that. I like it because it, I mean, to be able to do that, you do have to somewhat remove a bit of that prideful ego that some people may have, especially when you're a young coach. So they either have fear or their ego, or maybe those are two of the same things. But it requires you to say, look, like the only way I'm going to get better here is to work with people, right? And you've talked throughout this whole podcast about that, like building community, connecting with people. That was like the first thing when I asked you how you got into it. You said, hey, I went and found the volleyball coach. You didn't go find another basketball coach. You just found another coach and said, hey, like, I'm just going to learn as much as I can from you.
The ego thing, like, I would say that most coaches have somewhat of an ego.
Well, we all do.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. But, like, and that's what I enjoyed about my time as an assistant with the provincial team with Jeff and Kirby and Nick, and I'm the assistant. Like, I don't think my ego's big enough that I'm offended when Kirby doesn't take my advice, or he like I just want to be part of it and help out and learn what I can learn along the way. But I think that's valuable. Latching on for a minimum an hour or a few practices, or invite somebody in to run your practice. Like I brought, going way back, Greg Bouchard has come in and run a practice. Martin Riley has run a practice for me. Like all kinds of people have I've invited in as guests to help out here and there. It's how you learn and get better.
Yeah, I love that.
If you try to do it in a silo, I think you're not going to learn as much as you should be learning.
Yeah. Or you might learn it and take you 20 years, and you could have learned it in a single season, for example.
For sure. Yeah,
that's a good point. It definitely speeds up your process. And so on that note, I know obviously we're not going to be giving out your number or anything, but I mean, people are listening and you've been, you know Coach Favoni, but you don't know Coach Favoni. I mean, I'm assuming if people saw you or they got your email address somehow, that you would be open to talking basketball.
But like I said, I'm one of many, man. Like,
I know.
There's lots of, I would be willing to talk or to have someone come watch. But there's lots of people that are willing to open up their practices.
Yep.
Without a doubt. Like you said before, the basketball community in Winnipeg is small and fairly tight-knit, and there's lots of people willing to share their knowledge.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Well, I think that is going to wrap it up for us. I appreciate you taking the time. I know that I joked earlier on that you're one of our few listeners, but we do have quite a few listeners. But I do know that you are someone who listens to the podcast, and so having you on is been nice. I like I said, there's been many people who've requested you. You got to get Dean on. So to get you on is great, and to hear your stories. Oddly enough, although we probably have more connections than we even started to talk about, I don't or didn't know much about, you know, how you even got into coaching or your origin story or anything like that. I just, yeah. So it's, and this is what I appreciate so much about, you know, doing this here, is I get to hear people's story, and even someone like you, who I've known for a long time, I don't know, you know? And so I appreciate you coming on and sharing and telling your basketball story.
It's been fun. I appreciate the invite. Thanks a lot.
All right. Okay. Take care, Dean.
Bye, Doris.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Please like, subscribe, follow, and share this series, and reach out to us with your comments on the show. Thanks again for joining us.